The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Okay, so we have to start off the show, Conan and Matty, with congratulating UCC for winning the Sigerson Cup last night. I hate doing it because I went to college in Tralee and they were big at rivals. A cocky shower of go on the college. You know, these type of cocky, big universities. UCC I throw into that mix. UCD I throw into that mix. But look, they're Sigerson champions and we have to take our hats off to them because Billy Morgan is their manager and Billy Morgan is in the Mick O'Dwyer type of legendary status. So seeing the footage of Billy Morgan hugging all his players and the way they embraced him and patted him on the head, you know what I mean? He was like he's one of the boys at his age, which is absolutely unbelievable going.
Yeah, I think if you spoke to Billy Morgan, I've only done it very briefly on occasion. I think about 18 months ago we were in New York at the open of Rockland's GA club and he was there as kind of a guest manager, but you know, within 5 minutes of being in his company, this fella just lives, eats and drinks football. He absolutely loves it. He's so passionate about it, and even the interview last night after the game, you could really see that. Like, you can see it in his eyes how much he really loves this. And as you say, lads, young lads, 20 years of age, jumping up and down him as if he's one of the guys, I think.
Yeah,
that's all it needs.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Because these are college fellas, 20 years of age, hugging him like he's their friend.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's an incredible quality. That it's his fifth Sigerson. He won two as a player. And he's had them in the last 10 years, he's had them in six finals and they've won three of them. He said, in my own playing career, I won two Sigersons and I ranked my Sigerson medals up there with my All-Ireland medal and my county championships. That's big praise for Sigerson. And I keep saying this, you have to have played Sigerson, I think, to appreciate it. And people who haven't are like, it's just a college competition and I don't care. But outside of, obviously, All-Ireland, Club All-Ireland, Sigerson's up there with National League, I think.
Well, I'd say it's probably ahead of it, right, for a player. I don't know, like, you've played in both, well, you as well, Matty, right? Like, I think when you go to a game, even as a supporter, and you see the magic of it straight away, and you see how much it matters, and you do have this weird, not weird, but you have this attachment to your college afterwards, you know, so you do start supporting them. And I remember when the result was coming through from the semi-final St Mary's game, I think Benny Heron used to play for Derry and he was in Dubai and he's tweeting away like, you know, what's the latest and stuff. And you know, when you just have that connection with your old college, like, and UCD's competition was perfect. It was just like, we were all talking about UCD and NUIG and it was like, that was like the competition that we thought was happening, and then UCC were just hammering everybody in the background and coasted to victory.
Flew under the radar, yeah, with Sean O'Shea absolutely cleaning up. Like, I mean, it is. Maybe I'm the eternal optimist. I'm a negative person in life normally, but when it comes to GEA, I think Sigerson's could become such a bigger, and Billy Morgan alluded to this as well, said it's not given the you know, the prestige that it deserves. It's going on during the National League. The club competitions could be so much bigger if they all get a part of the season which is theirs and get the focus that they deserve. Like, I mean, you watched this last night, Matty, on YouTube.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And like you were saying, I think it's a fantastic competition. You know, I had a brief spell in it with WIT a long time ago, you know, with, I think, Declan Brown, Enda Sheehy, Lee O'Brien, a few players like that were playing. But I think just looking at it, it's a really, really good competition, along with the Fitzgibbon, and obviously UCC are in the final of that as well and could do a double. But it,
you know, how did you go with those few names you've thrown out there? That must have been the year after I left. That was probably 1997, was it? Or 98?
It was 98, 99, somewhere along there.
Were you there as well?
I was.
WIA, how many colleges was it you were playing for?
Five? I didn't play for them all. That's what I went to. But we're not here to talk about that.
You have more colleges than Jim McInnes. No, look, I think it's a fantastic competition. It's just trying to find the right area in the calendar for it, because the likes of Sean O'Shea, you know, is playing probably twice a week for the last 4 or 5 weeks. Like, he's 20 years of age, and probably well able to do it. But you know, it has to come against him at some stage. You know, maybe for Kerry this weekend in the Galway game or something like that. These are all tough games, but it's a fantastic competition. There has to be a gap for it somewhere in the calendar.
Well, the big thing here is if Sean O'Shea starts this weekend, and I think he shouldn't. I think it's completely unfair. He's played three Sigerson and three league games in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Like, I mean, it's outrageous. And now he's just won a Sigerson. And if Peter Keane doesn't say, enjoy that, celebrate that Wednesday night, don't you worry about coming with us even on the bus. I want you to take it easy this weekend and we'll see you back at training next Tuesday night. He has to say this to him, like, I mean, or else you're just flogging him. Like, I mean, Kerry are comfortable in the league. He's had a great start. Give him that. I'll be really pissed off if I see Sean O'Shea on the team. Genuinely.
Well, I suppose it's what's Kerry's ambition in the National League is it to be comfortable enough, stay in the division, probably get to a semi-final or final, are they happy enough now with being a Division 1 team again next year? I would absolutely agree with what you're saying, that he probably should have a break. And oh, Willie, I think, is a different kettle of fish. You could see him maybe in the squad, you know, and if not needed, you know, fair play. But you know, if I was Peter Keane, I wouldn't mind having him sitting behind me. Yeah.
But I would. Clifford tweaked his hamstring last year in the league because he was overdoing it. Like, I mean, think about the risk that would be on playing him on Sunday versus the, you know, just leaving him, the risk of leaving him on the bench or leaving him off the team completely. There's not much, like, the ruling out a potential injury is so much smarter than, you know, just having him for a league game that we know isn't the be all and end all. Like, I mean, we don't want him to get injured. Anyways, I want to talk about Mayo Dublin, lads, and this Mayo Dublin rivalry. So you think of the last 10 years, what's the big rivalry in Gaelic football? Obviously Dublin have dominated the, what do you call, not the noughties, what do you call this decade?
The 2010s?
The teens, the 2010s. So this is an interesting stat. Like, I mean, I think we've referenced this before. So Maddie, we want to get your thoughts on this. So Dublin have played Mayo 13 times under Jim Gavin. So we know Jim Gavin took over in 2013. So 13 times. Mayo haven't won once. Mayo are seen as this huge rivals of Dublin, yet they cannot beat Dublin. So how is this a rivalry?
I suppose if you tot it up, maybe the average difference in scores, it's not a whole lot over the 13 games. You know, with the
13-0 though. That's a whitewash. That's not a rivalry.
They're getting as close to them as anybody else is. And, you know, there's loads of stuff going to be mentioned, but like the two goals, the two own goals, the sending off of in the final of
Donny Vaughan,
like stuff like that. You know, what more do they have to do?
Well, that's it.
It's possibly going to be 14-0 after the weekend.
I was wrong. It's not 13-0. It's 10-0 on 10 defeats, 3 draws, and 0 victories. So
it's still zero for Mayo. Yeah. And look, I genuinely think it has been the biggest rivalry of the last 8-10 years in Gaelic football, purely because there's not many other teams getting, like, Dublin have hammered all comers, barring Mayo.
Yeah, and they've hammered Kerry once or twice, but Kerry have beaten them in a National League final. Mayo have never beaten them in any game. Kerry have also beaten them in the National League, you know, not the league final, and they've beaten them this year. Eamon Fitzmaurice in 2013 lost by a terrible decision with Kevin McManaman. The hit on Peter Crowley was a free, and that was one of the game of the ages where Kerry almost beat Dublin, and then they almost beat them in 2016 when Cluxton had that meltdown at half time and Dublin ended up beating them in the second half. So arguably on paper Fitzmaurice has a better record against Dublin than Mayo. It's because Mayo have drawn with them in All-Ireland finals, it's seen as that rivalry, but Mayo can't get over the line against them. Kerry did, and Kerry, you wouldn't think of Kerry Dublin being in any way of a rivalry.
And it's interesting when you said this earlier about the stat about Mayo not coming close to them. I thought, Jim Gavin's hardly lost to anybody, but then I looked at it and he's lost 10 games, like, which isn't a lot over 7 seasons, but he still has lost 10 times to 6 different teams, and you would have thought that Mayo would be in there somewhere. But I do think they're probably just a victim of, like, when you're the best of the rest, you're never underestimated. So every time Dublin play Mayo, they're at it, like, and they want to beat them. And if you sort of look at that Monaghan game last year at the end of the league, when Monaghan beat them in Croke Park, and then a week later Dublin won the league anyway, I think if Mayo were playing that game, Dublin would be there to win it, and they would never have...
I think that, yeah. You know, so I think Dublin, like, even if it's a league game, Dublin are not trying to give Mayo any hope.
Yeah, and it's like, is it Spurs used to have that awful record against the top four, and the old top four in the Premier League, but it was because they were always better than everybody, so when they played Spurs, they never took them for granted.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's sort of like that, but I still thought they might have had one win at least, because they're so good, Mayo themselves.
So this is, you've alluded to this, Matty, this is the hard luck story Mayo have had against Dublin since the tragedies they've had since pretty much, they beat them under Pat Gilroy in 2012. So then in, they played each other in the final in 2013. And, like, I mean, Dublin were down to 13 players. Like, Rory O'Carroll was walking around after doing his hamstring, and somebody else had done it as well. And, like, I mean, Mayo couldn't get over the line against him. And it was such a brilliant start by Mayo in that game, I remember. And then Bernard Blogan gets the flick goal. And, you know, all that brilliant work is outdone. And then, like, I mean, something similar in the 2016, or is it the 2016 final, where, again, they were a much better team in the first half, and they give Dublin two own goals. And that's not even to talk about the 2015 semi-final, where, like, I mean, Connolly gets his suspension lifted by the DRA, so he gets to play, and Lee Keegan, they're 4 points up, Lee Keegan on the 21-yard line in front of the goals to put them five up on a roll, puts it in the goalie's hands, Dublin come down and score two goals in a winning position there as well. Then you have the 2017 final where Donny Vaughan, like you said, Matty, gets sent off when they're obviously in a winning position as well. And that's not even mentioned in 2016 final, I'm jumping all over the place here as well, where Rochford obviously replaced Clark with Henley, who gave away that penalty. It's just been one, like, how could, is the curse real?
Reading out that again in one line from 13 to 18, you'd have to start thinking, is there something there? You really would, in fairness. Like, the two own goals, you know, I'd say if you look back at the history of the GA, there's never been two own goals scored in a half in that Ireland final.
No.
That a team
oh no
a
I'd say you'd be doing well to find any final.
Any game.
More than likely, but you'd have to start thinking, is there something? But there's definitely something in what you were speaking about a couple of minutes ago, that, you know, even in league games, Dublin want to beat them. But were some of these bigger games, you know, the likes of a Super 8 game or something to be played in Castlebar as opposed to Croke Park,
yes,
where all the big games have been played?
Yeah.
You know, look at a national.
That'd be a fantastic game, wouldn't it? Dublin
absolutely
away to Mayo in the Super 8.
A National League group games, we'd call it, you know, in round 1 to 7 in Castlebar, wherever. You know, it's a big game, but it's not a huge game. You know, a Super 8 game in Castlebar, Mayo, Dublin,
even
neutral, you know, somewhere Port Leash or wherever, you know, now that's a proper game. And all these really tight games that Mayo have come out on the wrong side of have all been in Croke Park.
Yeah, no, they definitely have. We'll talk a little bit about that in part 3 when we look ahead to some of the games. Another bit of news, lads, is Paul Durkan is back for Donegal. So he's been living in Dubai for the last couple of years, and apparently he's back training with them. So he's a huge plus for them. Like this like Sean Patton obviously played for them last year, and he's an ex-soccer goalkeeper, and he kind of looks the part, and he kind of came with a bit of a reputation from soccer, but, like, I mean, he didn't really carry that through. Like, I mean, against Down last year in the championship, he had a nightmare. And like, I mean, I think this is very interesting. Paul Durkan never seems flustered. He's always, Cluxton never seems flustered, obviously the odd rare time, but they kind of transmit calm amongst their backline. They're never looking like, give me something. They're just relaxed, you know? Because I'm thinking with these goalkeepers, a lot of it's temperament. Because, like, I mean, Niall Morgan, talent-wise, is up there, I think, with the likes of Cluxton, Durkan, and all these goalkeepers. Because, really, when you look at the actual skill, Matty, of putting the ball down on the 14-yard line, or it's on the 20-yard line now, and sticking a soccer pass into someone's run, a lot of them is tapping it to a corner back. Like, the actual skill involved in it, I'm not sure it's that high. Like, Cluxton obviously is better at it than everyone else. I think it's temperament with these goalies. The pressure that's on these kickouts, the other teams pushing up, knowing whether to actually go there or go there. It's the decision making and temperament, I think, more than the actual skill of executing the kickout. Would that be fair?
Yeah, like, I definitely, but in fairness, I do think there's a lot of a huge amount of ability and a huge amount of practice goes into it. You know, the likes.
Yeah,
of,
but a lot
Rory,
of my
Rory
think,
Began
yeah.
is the best.
Oh, Began as well.
While,
yeah.
You know, he's the some of the kickouts last year in Clonus against Kerry were just ridiculous. You know, putting into guys' chest, they were running away from him. You know, 60 yards away from the goal, things like this. But as you say, it definitely transmits calmness to a defence that's in front of him. That, no, if anything goes over him, he has the ability to come and sweep up behind him and stuff like that. Plus, they're really good shot stoppers, and, you know, it's been a bit of a problem area for Donegal in the last couple of seasons, probably since Durkan has left, and the fact that he's back, you know, will be a huge boost to them. But, you know, I genuinely think that, you know, there's a lot of work goes in not just with the keeper, but with the, probably a lot of the outfield players to make that happen. And I think to make it look a lot easier than it is, because you know, yeah. if you've played, you play a couple of matches in goal now and again, and you're trying to pick out a fella that's running 40, 50 yards away from you, it's not that simple. And this is only at, you know, at bad club level.
Okay.
Never mind at the speed they're playing and being pushed up on.
I've underestimated it then. Obviously, Rory Beggan, who I left out, what he does is very unique in that he can kick it that far into someone's pad. I still think somebody that's a half back on the 45, that you should be able to stick it off the ground into his chest running towards you. I think the point I'm making is a lot of goalkeepers, obviously, if it is a skill, a lot of them have similar ability in that area. It's choosing the right one or not freaking out when the pressure's on, maybe, that separates Beggan, Cluxton, Durkin from the other ones.
Yeah, because that skill is becoming a bit of a bare minimum for keepers now, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's the minimum requirement.
You have to pick out a halfback or a midfielder. But yeah, like that, it's a good point you make about temperament. Like, have you ever seen Stephen Cluxton shouting at anyone? Like,
no.
Has it ever cracked up? Like, you know, like when you're a keeper, it's obviously the loneliest position, and every mistake you make results in a score, and everybody knows you are directly at fault, but he's never ever blaming anybody else or shouting like somebody, as you say, show for me.
Well, that's it. If a goalkeeper's doing that, he's making a show of everyone. You often see as well, Matty, players on the field, they're trying to hang the forwards out. They might let a roar, will someone show? Like, and when I hear that, I'm like, you weasel. Like, you know,
you're trying to throw us
on the bus. My man's marking me from the front. I'm waiting for you to get a bit closer. It wasn't the right run. Don't try to start shouting. You know, lads that do that. Like, and they're only covering their backs with the manager.
That's it. Like, someone will shout over to the manager as well and wave their hands in there.
They're not moving in there.
What am I supposed to do here? But yeah, like, Cluxton has obviously never gone anywhere near that level. Like, he's always completely calm. And when he makes a mistake, like the Kerry game, we say he's having a meltdown, but he just kept running back and getting the ball and setting it up, and internally he was making these mistakes, but it never
showed. Kerry obviously had a big part to play in that, because they did something Cluxton had never seen before, pushing all their players practically into their half of the field.
And a lot of keepers there in that case would have just started lumping the ball down the field, you know, to sort of just rid themselves of any responsibility, but he just kept trying to find what Dublin were trying to do.
Yeah, which he was trying to do. Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, because look, I think in the Dublin-Kerry game a couple of weeks ago, Dublin were obviously short a few players, as were Kerry, but had Cluxton alone been playing in that game, I think Dublin probably would have won it. You know, Comerford was very happy to go to right cornerback and kind of wait as long as he had to. And, you know, Cluxton where would be happy to bang the ball 50, 60 metres over the Kerry press and just get Dublin out of trouble that way. But Comerford, you know, just through lack of experience, hadn't got the time or probably got the composure to do it. And, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see Comerford in front of Hill 16 with those pressure kicks. I can't imagine the pressure that's on it in front of the hill like that. Audra McNeilish, he's been given a break, which is fair enough. He was very, very close friends with Micheál Rorty, who died in that car accident. And he's coming off a club season, and he thinks he's on the go for 2 years. And it's just kind of an appetite thing, Maddie. And I'm sure you can relate to that, because I definitely can, when the club rolls over and you get a run. And often I find it the other way around, when the county's over and you're looking to be going back into your club and they want you, and you're like, Jesus, I could do with 2 or 3 weeks. It's not your body, it's your head. You need to get the hunger back and want to go in rather than have to go in.
Absolutely, 100%. I've known the last good few years playing club, and I haven't played hurling with the club for a while, but over the years you were kind of come the back end of the championship, you played hurling one weekend, football the next, and you could end up playing 10, 12 weeks in a row. And at the end of it, whatever has happened, you're just literally exhausted. And, you know, I think you can absolutely understand where Orr McNeilis is coming from, and particularly with the tragedy that had in Donegal as well, that, you know, just needs a bit of time away from him, a bit of time to enjoy himself. And look, I don't think it takes too long. I think there's every chance they'll probably be back for the championship, or potentially could be back for the championship.
Yeah.
You know, 2-3 months, and, you know, you're good to go again. And you need the appetite. As we've said, it's not physical, it's completely mental, that you're mentally drained. Your body doesn't get, you're probably only getting fitter physically, but mentally, I think, is the biggest challenge for most amateur sports players. And it's like, I think it's what sets the likes of the All Blacks apart from everyone else, that they can keep week in, year out, keep churning out top class, top quality performances.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, I don't think Donegal fans need to worry. Audra McNeilish, reading from his interview, he's not saying he's not going back, he's just saying he needs a bit of time. And in fairness to Bonner, he's given it to him. Look, if I was the Donegal manager, Audra McNeilish wanted a few weeks, I'm giving it to him.
Yeah. Like,
they need him back.
Aye, yeah, and he'll be brilliant again when he comes back. Like, you know, and he's been playing all in semi final there at the weekend. He's going to be in good shape whenever he comes back.
There's a good chance they'll probably get promoted, possibly without him anyway. And you know, to have him coming back in fresh, you know, for the first round of the championship would be a huge boost to the league all as well as Paul Durkin.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here. I was reading this during the week, and I thought it was definitely a strange one. So this is we know Cork haven't started the year very well. They're gone to a defensive system. You know, obviously in response to the two hammerings they took last year against Kerry and against Tyrone, and we've talked about this on the show. But this was something I was reading. At a county board meeting a fortnight ago, chairwoman Tracy Kennedy indicated that McCarthy, this is Ronan McCarthy, had hinted that the Cork's early season difficulties could be partly attributed to not yet finding replacements for Kieran O'Sullivan and Eamon Ryan as selectors. 7 months on from Cork's exit in the 2018 Championship, that can't really be an excusable, or that can't be excusable or acceptable. 7 months and he can't get two selectors to replace two selectors that are gone. Like, I mean, I knew Cork football had kind of, you know, gone, slipped down, and it's not glamorous, but Christ almighty, like, I mean, every county is able to fill selectors' roles.
They should be, you would think, but you know, possibly are Kieran O'Sullivan and Eamon Ryan doing a bit more than that, and doing a bit of coaching as well, because I think the day of Jim Gavin doing all the coaching, or whoever doing all the coaching, I think you have to have help, you need backup and stuff like that. And I think to me it sounded like Eamon Ryan was bought in into the position as a coach, and would appear to be a fairly good one, judging on his record with the ladies over 10 years. So you know, whether that's lacking or whatever, but you know, surely to God there's two guys in Cork who are willing to be selectors with the football team. Look, I know times are tough, and it's not the most glamorous jobs, no more than our own at the moment, but you know, surely to God that can't be used as an excuse.
Well, I have to talk to you about selectors' roles anyways. Like, is there a more kind of stupid kind of, like, there's no value to it? Okay, listen to this. You're a selector and you go in, right? And you're at every training session. You're at every meeting. You're at everything. You might even have a good idea or two that you'll give to the coach or give to the manager. You'll never ever get credit for it. You're at everything. You get credit for nothing. Like, it's one of the most selfless jobs in the GAA to put in that level of commitment. And you'll obviously, there'll be a few jobs like administration jobs. Will you ring that bus, organise? You're doing all that. And again, if you've got good ideas, someone else is getting credit for them. Like, I mean, it really is the most thankless job in the GAA.
I've been.
Who would be a selector? You've been coached. You've been in as a coach.
As a coach, and I wasn't a selector, nor did I want to be. But I have been on a couple of expert panels where, I won't say with who or under who, but we had selectors, and like, you were literally saying to guys, you know, what is he doing? But when you actually dig a bit deeper into it, apparently these guys actually are there for a reason. You know, that they can read games, stuff like that, stuff that other people just can't do.
Yeah,
and you know, to do have a reason. Like, I think the day of just a guy being there as a selector, I think they're getting probably thin on the ground or fairly numbered, because I can't imagine that the likes of Paul Clark is standing with his hands in his pockets at Dublin training every night, looking to see who's going well and things like that. I think he's a bit more hands on than that.
But here's the thing as well: I'm the manager of the team. I've got a very clear vision of how I want this team to play and who will fit into it. And then I go into a team meeting and three selectors vote me down on what I want. Like, I mean, I'm not having that as manager. So, like, I mean, how does even the dynamic of that, you know what I mean, work? Is it an old fashioned thing? Or, like, I mean, in, like, obviously in the Premier League, the manager picks the team. Nobody's telling him, well, I've got a say in this. It is a GAA tradition. Or does a manager have, like, more power in the selection that a selector can give their opinion?
Yeah.
But you know, they'll take it on board. But it's not like, obviously, a manager can't be voted down from what he wants.
Yeah, I don't think a manager should be encouraging a vote. Like, you know, he should just listen to what they have to say and then make the decision.
My father was selector on a lot of teams, and he said, well, it came down to two against one or whatever. Like, that it almost would have been a vote, yeah.
That's madness. I would never do that as a manager. I would just listen to what they have to say and respect what they have to say, because that's where you have them in. But ultimately, you're the one making the decision, because you're the one that's going to fall on them, like, you know, if something goes bad. But I just think of selectors through club experience, just, and it's usually just somebody very popular, and like what you're saying there, that selfless thing, and that's why people tend to like them at club level, because they're there and they'll have something funny to say, they'll say something nice to you in between drills that you're going well, or they'll fill up water, you know, and they'll help out with all the organising. Yeah,
it's a vocation, isn't it? A selector's job. That's the reality of it. Like, I mean, It definitely is a GAA tradition. I don't know it. It could. It might not die out at club level, but I'd say at intercounty level, it's probably gone. Like you say, Matty, the traditional selector that just comes and maybe has his say on the team selection. Dublin Senior Club Championship draw. Always have, you know, big interest in this. And there's a group of death straight away: Kilmacud, Crokes, Ballymun, Kickham, St Sylvester's, and Nafina. Ouch is all I have to say to that. Like, I mean, that's a sensational group. Our own Conan, Matty's Skerry's Harps transfer, one life, two clubs, like myself. So he's in with Brian Cullen and the lads in Skerry. So you got a lovely little group. Like I mean, I don't want you, obviously you take each game as it comes.
I know, well, that's a tough group, and every game's going to be tough.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it's a group where you'd be looking at it and going, you fancy Ballyboden, Clontarf are decent, Lucan are decent, but you could potentially beat Clontarf or Lucan.
Yeah, like last year we were in with Nafina and Vincent's, and like we thought we were unlucky not to go through. We had Nafina in the last game, and we needed to beat them to go through, and we drew, and it was last minute point to sort of equalise. We were five up, so we're sort of disappointed we didn't get to the quarters, but you're looking thinking, you know, Ballyboden's obviously going to be a tough draw. We drew with Lucan last year. I have never played Clontarf since I joined Skerry, so I don't know.
Is Paul Casey still on the go with Lucan?
Yes, he was last year anyway.
Full back or somewhere probably.
He was wing half back at the
wing
time.
Wing back still.
Yeah. Aggressive still as well.
Really?
But yeah, so it's a good group, like, and we're just looking forward to the challenge ahead.
Okay, outstanding. Group four is Vincent's, Bridget's, Castleknock and Ballinteer. Vincent's, Bridget's, Castleknock, all top level teams, even though Bridget's kind of flatter to deceive. So look, I don't know, Matty, have you interest in the first? I think Dublin club football is just on a different level competition wise, and obviously because of all the cultures that play up there, as well as the brilliant Dublin players, it just makes a real interesting championship out of it.
It's an excellent championship, and thankfully you do show a fair few games, particularly the latter end of the championship on television, which it's always great to look at. But you know, just looking at all the groups, the others, barring probably group two, there's none of them are, you know, particularly easy. And you know, it's no coincidence, you've a really strong Dublin senior championship, you've a really strong Dublin senior football team, and you know, probably some of the cultures coming in are probably helping that, where you know, you've really, really strong club teams and they're only getting stronger. Like I would imagine a lot of Dublin teams are probably training like county teams were maybe 6-8 years ago.
And
very possibly harder than some.
Or
every bit as hard as some of them anyway.
I was taken aback by the level of training Parnells were doing in comparison to Portlaoise, who would win it every year and have run, like, we've been in All-Ireland club final. Like, I mean, that was a bit earlier, but we've won provincial club titles and you wouldn't be doing anywhere near the strength and conditioning they are now, but we weren't at the time. And I was thinking, Jesus, this is nearly the level I was doing with Laois. Strength and conditioning and stuff like that.
A lot of clubs are probably a long way behind, and I know from our own days coming up here to play Dublin teams in challenge games, you know, for 20 minutes you would be run completely off your feet, and if you could stick it out that long, you would hang in the game. We had some great games up here, but we really felt even that time, and that's a good pile back, that you know, we were a long way behind as regards strength and conditioning, aerobic fitness, everything that the Dublin clubs are.
Yeah, that was the big thing I noticed. Two results I have for you, Matty, before we move on, because we've Rory Grugan coming up on the show next. 2016 National Football League, Wexford 420, London 1-6. 2018 National Football League, London 2-10, Wexford 8 points. Jesus, now we know you don't know what you're going to get from London on a year-to-year basis, but that's a big slide for Wexford. And look, we kind of mentioned this to you already, and then they came back and had a great result against Antrim, but losing to London, and this is no disrespect to London, and you have a Wexford man managing them, like, I mean, that's an embarrassing result for Wexford football.
Absolutely. You know, we were sitting here after the first round losing to Leitrim, and you know, tentatively tipped Leitrim to beat him, and they actually went and won. But Waterford are coming the weekend, and you know, God only knows what's coming. Waterford came to Wexford last year and won in the qualifiers. But you know, look, I really believe you reap what you sow, and we have been struggling at underage for a long number of years, and what we're putting into it in every sense, and until it's arrested. And as I said, I think I might have mentioned a couple of weeks ago that, you know, Anthony Masterson, our former goalkeeper, has gone in as GDO, and he's doing his heart started doing a lot of good work. But to be honest, it's probably a generation away before we're seeing any results of that at National Football League level. And you know, look at I think losing by that score to London, and absolutely no disrespect to London, Kieran Deely is doing a fantastic job with them over there, and very, very professional in his approach, but I think that's an all time low for Wexford football.
Yeah, it probably is. Alright, we'll come back with Rory Grugan.
Advice advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
So Armagh find themselves in the relegation places, but only one win off the top of Division 2 table. And Rory Grugan joins us on the line to talk about this. Rory, this is a very weird position you find yourselves in.
Yeah, it's a really strange one. Not only, I suppose, our games, but even looking at the other results, the way they've been, like in the most recent round three there, I suppose after we get beaten by Meath, you're thinking like we're going to really be in bother. But with the way other results went, the fact that Tipperary beat Donegal and then was it Fermanagh beating Kildare as well, it just left it so open.
Yeah,
like, you know, the difference that there's only 3 points between bottom and top probably shows how competitive a division it is. But from our point of view, like, I think it's been fairly well documented that we should have seen a couple of those games out. And even to be, you know, probably people talking about, oh, we seem to be making progress and we're playing good football and stuff, but it's kind of not much consolation then when you don't kind of pick up the points either.
No.
You feel like you're going the right direction, but it's just of trying about seeing those games out when you are in a position, especially coming down the home stretch in those games.
So you can say in all three games you had yourselves in great position, especially the first two, and you could argue against Meath a point down with a really strong wind with 10 minutes to go. All three you didn't see out. Like, I mean, it jumped into my mind talking about it on the podcast that I remember Laois kind of smash and grabbed you up in the Athletic Grounds. Tipperary did it to you. You know, like, I mean, is closing games out an issue for you? Is this something that you've spoken about, or you've identified it as something that you might have a problem with now and then?
Probably in that season it was more so of an issue. I heard you talking about those games in the podcast, and it jumped into my head as well, that especially the Tipperary game, you know, probably the goal at the end, the Michael Quinlivan goal, like, we would have looked back at that a lot and saw how kind of naive we were and the way we sat up and stuff, and really had to adjust how we were kind of, in terms of game management, how we were trying to see things out. In terms of these ones, you kind of have to take each of them on their merits on their own. Like the Kildare game, I do accept we should have been better. It was more probably the mistakes we made on the ball ourselves, more so than letting them back into it. Like, we were maybe five up with about 12 or 13 minutes left, like, so we should have saw that out. Then the Clare one, you were four up going into stoppage time. And I suppose, like, we thought we'd defended the initial ball well. Next thing, Tubberty kicks it over from the sideline. You know, we go up the pitch again, there's a turnover down the far sideline, and they work the ball up the pitch again. One of our defenders does well to win the ball out in front of his man, knocks it out for another sideline, and you're thinking, you know, you're going to see this out, and he drops one in on top of the square that ends up in the net, like, and you're just going, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, so that's...
And then I suppose then the last one, the Meath one, we had been 9 points down at half time. We were really poor in the first half, and to be fair to me, they were brilliant with the wind, and then we got all the momentum, had kicked maybe seven or eight scores in a row, and just as we got it down to 1 point, they maybe won the next kick out and just were real smart with the ball then and killed all our momentum and won a scoreable free close to goal out to go back to two, and kind of just that gave them their confidence back and they kind of saw it out from there. But it's frustrating, like, I suppose, for us looking back on what you do differently and stuff and what you have to learn from us. There's a fair amount of young players and stuff maybe playing their first games in the league, and I found maybe over the years that you learn that wee bit of experience and seeing those things out. Like, and you're looking back on it again, whether it's a decision making to maybe go for a goal when there's a point on, trying the kick pass and maybe there was a safer option on, and you sort of ask yourself sometimes, are we a bit, you know, too keen in that way sometimes? Like, we would get a fair amount of plaudits probably for the style of football we like to play, but sometimes you'd be kind of wondering to yourself, is it always the best? You could be a wee bit more pragmatic at times, especially in the last few minutes.
Well, that's it. The kicking game is risky, and why play the risky game when you're ahead? You know what I mean? Towards the end of it, maybe that's when you pull the reins back a bit, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's it. You kind of get yourself into a bit of an existential crisis, because it's funny, last year, after the Roscommon game, like, everyone talked about it being one of the games of the summer and stuff, and even then with my own club, we had a game against in the county final against Cross McLean, like, and everyone talked about how good it was for the neutral and stuff. Yeah. And in both of those games, I was coming out on the wrong side, and I'm going like, is it like, what does it really mean if I'm, you know, part of this great game that everyone enjoyed as a neutral, but as me, as a person who wants to win, I'm coming out losing both games. What's better, you know? So I suppose I just would have a belief, and luckily Kieran's very much the same way about wanting to play an attacking brand of football, and he believes the best way of moving the ball forward is initially through the foot and stuff as well. So it just suits the style of players we have, you know. So I think that's just when we're at our best.
Yeah, and that's like, I mean, that's fantastic, and I think you're a great team to watch. I was at that Roscommon game, and like, you took a bad beating against Tyrone the year before in the quarterfinals, and you stuck with your guns, and you came back, you know, with the moving the ball through the foot. And maybe it wasn't your system that day. Maybe no matter what system you played, you were flat against Tyrone, because you see Roscommon and Cork have responded to those hammerings, and they've gone, you know, they've kind of followed the trend of playing more of a hand passing game and dropping bodies back. You've stuck with your belief and your philosophy.
Yeah, I suppose there's maybe two philosophies within each game, within every sort of team's game plan, if you like. Now, like, without the ball, I'd like to think we're fairly clued in terms of not leaving your back door open, you know, the way we probably did in 2017 against Tyrone, where we were going up, committing loads of numbers to the attack, getting caught in the trap, and then they were hitting us on the counter-attack. You know, I think we've sort of learned a wee bit how to be more kind of secure at the back in that type of situation, when teams have players behind the ball. But the idea is, I suppose, still for us, when we get it back, our first thought is to move it as quick as we can to our forward line, because we believe we've got good forwards who, if we move the ball early, and as the old cliche goes, like, it moves faster, the ball moves faster than the man. So we do like to get it up there as quick as possible. So I like to think we've got a good balance. You know, we're always trying to improve. Like, our big thing is we're playing on the front foot and trying to get as many scores as possible. But, you know, there's probably the debate there as well, and sometimes between management too, like, do we need to keep it a wee bit more short up at the back? But like I said earlier, Kieran's always been of the opinion that if you're playing on the front foot, that means you're more with the ball and the team you're playing against on the back foot there.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. Obviously, Jamie Clark and Stephen Campbell are back this year, which is fantastic for you, because they're two top level forwards. You have yourself, who kind of alternates between number 11 or maybe the front of it, front three, you know, out in front of the two and playing around. You have Ryan O'Neill, who's come in, who looks like he's got sensational range of passing, you know, being able to put it in, and he's a big man to come in his own ball. Andrew Mernon is coming off an unbelievable game. Have you spoken about getting the balance right between all you kind of, which seem to me to be footballers predominantly, is where you're strongest, rather than the Brian Dewar type fellas that might run around the field tackling and winning the ball back?
Yeah, I suppose we've probably, like, there's maybe an understanding now that without the ball, there's a responsibility on most people within the team to do a certain amount of defending or a role within your defence, whether that's, you know, the initial press up front or more deep lying half forwards. But we try to keep as such a shape that'll be beneficial to us when we do have the ball. Like, so probably some of the earlier games that there's been this year, you'd have the likes of Jamie, Stefan Supi and Rain or Needlick, which is a fairly potent attack. But I suppose Andrew Mernon's actually been injured in the early parts of the season, and Ethan Rafferty as well, who was playing it at the start of last year. And like that, those boys would all be vying, say, if you're playing that type of shape for three positions, five players, and then you've myself who would like to be playing there. There's and, you know, there's a load of other forwards like Niall Grimley and our wing forwards like Tamar Hall, Ryan Machine. So we do kind of have a good few options there at the minute. And I suppose now for us to be wanting to compete with the best teams, which we're enjoying, you know, competing with better teams in Division 2, we need to have that competition for places as well. So them boys coming back in was a big boost this year. Jamie and Stefan and Oisin O'Neill, Rain's brother's back in this year as well. So everyone's kind of pushing hard, but there's definitely competition for places now up in the forward line.
Yeah, which is really important. Like, I mean, you definitely have, you're overloaded in the forward division, really, aren't you? Like, I mean, but that, obviously that's a good thing. You play. You have to be on your guard all the time. I saw a quote from you by saying, like, obviously your Ulster Championship record under Geezer has been very disappointing. You haven't won a game yet. And I saw a quote from you, and you said, as a squad, we've had to look very hard at why we failed in Ulster at that stage of the year again. We put so much work into how we're going to play. If you compare it to the qualifiers where you literally don't have much time to work on your game plan, in theory, you'd think we should have prepared better for Fermanagh. So you do well in the qualifiers when you don't have to prepare too much, and when you put all your eggs into the Ulster Championship basket and have a big lead in. Is the pressure too much for you? Are you overthinking the game plan? Are you over practicing it? Are you better off just playing a week on week where it's kind of, sometimes you can overstudy?
Absolutely. Like, I suppose you do, there was a bit of an inquest into that again last year, and you ask yourself, like, because you maybe have that gap now, especially there with the club month and stuff, and your usual gap between the league and the championship, it's nearly like a double season. So you reset yourself, and then you've maybe got a 4 or 5 week window leading in to the championship first round game, which you never have at any other stage of the season.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it suits us particularly as a team. I wouldn't like to think that it was a disadvantage that you had time to prepare and stuff, but some of the times it just feels like we got momentum through the qualifiers, you know, where we're going either every week or every 2 weeks, that you were obviously getting a look at a team on a Thursday night before, but it wasn't this case that you were nearly in your own head too much about how it was going to go, that you were perhaps second guessing yourself in terms of Fermanagh's setup and stuff last year, that it came to the point where we just then fell completely flat on the day and didn't perform anywhere near our potential. So I do agree to an extent that we're maybe better to not big it up too much, you know, that this is the be all and end all. I suppose the whole idea of Kieran's record and stuff in Ulster seems to be bandied about now, and I'd imagine it will be again closer to the summer, so it'll be up to us as players to kind of not get too concerned with that and try and just kind of play a wee bit with a wee bit more flow in our football, and hopefully, you know, bring out that performance.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Arsene Wenger hasn't won a trophy in so many years. It starts to become a thing the longer it goes on, and then it just adds on that pressure. The problem about not building up the first round of the Ulster is that you only have Down, who are your mortal enemies, and you have almost unless you make a league final, you almost have 2 bloody months to lead into this one.
I know, that's it. I suppose we played them there 2 years ago as well, so yeah. There's all that as well, and you definitely, there'll be plenty of hype around it with your near neighbours, like, but it's a frustrating thing too, I suppose, and it seems to be a thing about Kieran's record and all, but it's just, like, as players, you really wish that you could take on more of that responsibility yourself, rather than it being dead at his door, like, because I look back probably my own career so far, and there's been stop starts with different years when I was in and out for different reasons, travelling and that, but I've only been involved in 2 first round wins in my time playing with Armagh, which is probably over the course of about 7 or 8 seasons. You know, we've lost our last 4, and there was 2014 we won, and 2011. That's the only years that I've, since I've been involved, that we've actually won the first round. So it's something you really want to get that monkey off the back, like.
Yeah.
Not only as a team, but even for me personally.
Well, you know, like the thing with Geezer, he just has to say boo and it's headlines. Like, I mean, that's just something he has to deal with. And,
yeah,
you know, it just, whatever team he's over, it's magnified, you know. Like, I mean, he's just that big, yeah, big, huge character within the GAA. Come here, I read another thing from you. I want to run past you. And like I said, I was at that game, Roscommon game, and you missed a penalty. And you said, yeah, you hadn't been practicing penalties. So I think it's because you were captain. And you stepped up when maybe somebody else didn't want to step up?
I remember, again, I'm always listening to the show, and I remember you talking about this maybe the week after, and I did an interview maybe with the Irish News, and I think the fellow doing it maybe picked me up wrong. I was actually saying that I had been practicing that week, but as the penalty was given, whatever it was, the keeper said something and he just kind of put me off a wee bit, and he said something like, oh, the same as last time, basically in terms of which side I was going to go to. So instead of going to the side I'd been going to even all week in training, I like second guessed myself and went the other way, and he saved it.
Oh no.
That was the point that I was making, which was even more frustrating in my own head, that I didn't just stick to my guns and go the side I was planning.
Right, so this is Colm Lavin in goals from Roscommon. That's a nice little trick. It's just a little subtle thing to get inside your head without. It's not trash talk. It's just same as you always go. Like, I mean, it's a good one.
Yeah,
really.
Because I'd had a penalty maybe earlier on in the league and scored. So I don't know at this stage whether keepers are looking in their preparation for penalty deckers. But he tried something anyway, so it wasn't worked for him. But
Yeah.
No, not a good memory.
It definitely worked. Right, so you have Tipperary this weekend anyways. Like I said, you can't build it up anymore because you're at home and you kind of simply have to win this because, like we said at the start, that a win could see you go top, you know, or two wins in a row could see you go top, or suddenly you could be down with Cork in a, like, Jesus, Armagh have yo-yoed too much now and you're too good to be going back down to Division 3. So maybe there's a bit of pressure.
Yeah, there probably is. Like, round four always seems to be kind of crunch time in your league campaign. It either means you're looking up one way or looking down the other. And the way this league is, like we said, it's really kind of a case of, especially with your home games too, we lost our home advantage for the Clare game. So this is actually our first home league game out of the first three rounds. So it's important to try and make use of that. You know, obviously we talked about that Tipperary game in 2017 in the league too, with the late goal. So there's that added sort of motivation of trying to get the win this weekend, because it's just nothing easy come down. We've done a goal the following week in Ballybuffet, which is always extremely difficult. So we really don't want to be leaving ourselves clamouring for points, you know, coming into the last two weekends.
Yeah, not with them getting a few lads back now as well. Donegal are only going to get stronger for the rest of it. But come here, listen, I've been trying to get you on the podcast for a while. I finally got you on it, so thanks very much for that.
No problem. It's good to be on. I'm a big fan of the show.
Great stuff, Rory. Thanks a lot and best of luck for the rest of the year.
Cheers, Colin. Bye.
Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I
don't want no one in it, man. So Paddy Power predictions, which have kind of turned into Paddy Power accumulators here now, lads. So we didn't do too well the last one. Well, I can only speak for myself. I think all of mine lost except for one. Like, I mean, it was a bloodbath. It was an absolute bloodbath. The only one that I won on was Clare. Who did Clare be? Oh, Cork.
Cork, yeah.
That was an obvious one, and they were a great price. The other three lost. But anyways, we'll try and do a little bit better. We've Matty making his debut today, and we'll see what kind of accumulator he comes up with. So my accumulator is 13-1. So it's Dublin at 1-3 according to Paddy Power's odds, and this was yesterday's odds. Now that could have changed. Clare 9-4 against Kildare away, which is my outside one. Then I have Longford at evens against home to Down. Down are pretty much evens as well, and I've Leitrim favourites at 8-15 to beat Limerick. So we'll talk about Dublin Mayo here first. And the interesting thing about this Dublin Mayo game, lads, is that, like, Mayo have a chance to knock Dublin out of the league this year. Like, I mean, Mayo are trying out young fellas, and it would be a great experience for these young fellas to play Dublin in the league. But they also have a chance of knocking Dublin out. So whatever that might do to Dublin, we never know. You know, like, Dublin are going for 5 in a row. There's that pressure there. Suddenly they don't make a league final when they've always done it under Jim Gavin. And maybe that might add a little bit of pressure to Dublin. So does James Horan go with his very strongest team and try to knock Dublin out of the league? Or does he say, well, these young lads are going to benefit from this because we might play Dublin in Croke Park in the summer and go out with your, like, you know, and with your sprinkle of five young fellas?
Probably, I think, a little bit of both, but I think probably for Mayo it shouldn't be about knocking Dublin out of the league. It should be about getting a victory over Dublin, because as the stats have shown, they've been very thin on the ground over the last 10 years. So, you know, to put one in the win column for Mayo would be huge. And, you know, it will, if he has that sprinkling of young guys playing that he's had so far in the league, it will give them a bit of confidence if and probably when to come back to Croke Park later on the year to play Dublin. And I said, not really, but I look at Dublin going out of the league, you know, while they won't want it, and they'll certainly say that, you know, I don't think it'll be a big disaster for them. You know, it'll be a little bit fresher, a game or two less, and, you know, it might actually help them in the long run. But I think it's more from Mayo's point of view, the victory, to just get a win over Dublin, as opposed to knocking Dublin out of the league.
We've mentioned with Dublin the fact that the 2 week break now, this is real. There's no excuses for Dublin now. Jim Gavin can't talk about fitness or anything because they're back from holidays long enough. They've had 3 league games, the 2 week break. Now we're seeing Dublin, you know, the real Dublin, but they have a good few injuries, especially in the defence. Keane Sullivan obviously has been out, Philly McMahon has been out, John Small and Eric Lowndes from the last game. Small's obviously suspended and Lowndes is injured as well. Now they still have enough, like Jack McCaffrey's back, James McCarthy's there, Johnny Cooper's there, you know what I mean? They still have a pretty strong hand to be to be dealing with.
They always do, don't they? They've never ever lost 3 games in a year under Jim Gavin, like, you know, no. League or Championship. So like, and I think with Mayo coming, they're going to be back at it again, because when Mayo come to Dublin, they want to spank them. Not only now do they need to win, but they'll want to win anyway because it's Mayo. So yeah, this will be the real test, and if Mayo can win this, then you really are looking at A, there might be some questions over Dublin, and B, Mayo, like, questions being answered, like, they could be the real deal. And like the question about youngsters, I thought bringing them in, well, like, the reason wasn't really to give them a chance and sort of see what they're like. It was actually because they were improving the team and
potential, you know, starters.
McDonough and Reap and Ruan, like, these boys have won All Irelands, like, you know, freshers titles. You know, they're like the proper pedigree coming in there as well, and they're obviously showing well.
You're throwing freshers title into pedigree, are you?
I wanted to make All Ireland plural.
But McDonough obviously is the exciting one, the wing forward, and like, I mean, he was outstanding against Tyrone. He got a point against Cavan. I didn't see that game. Kevin McLaughlin is back now as well, so he came on for Fionn McDonough last time. Keane O'Connor is back as well. So, like, I mean, Mayo have a lot of their big guns filtering back in here. This is going to be a classic game. There's no doubt about that. It's a Saturday night game under lights in Croke Park. And two teams, while you talk about Dublin, or some people like to talk about Dublin hand passing outside and being boring, they're only doing that because the other team is camped inside their 45. Saturday night we'll see a brilliant game of attacking football, because James Horan only knows one way to play. Dublin know when they play Mayo they're not going to have to play their plan B, which I think that is their plan B. Dublin like to go for you as well. So, like, I mean, whatever we can expect, or whoever we're trying to predict to win, it's going to be a great game.
Yeah, potentially it really should be, you know, weather permitting, you know, a dry evening in Croke Park, and two teams that want to play football. And I know Mayo have really opened up this year in the league and really tried to attack, and the other likes of Colin Boyle and Lee Keegan and Keith Higgins, they look really refreshed and they look fresh again this year and hungry again.
Yeah.
Add in those couple of young guys, you know, wait a couple more to come back. You know, it has the makings of a very good game, and, you know, Dublin will not want to lose in Croke Park, and they certainly won't want to lose to Mayo with that record they have over them. So look at, as we say, it definitely has the makings of a good one.
But that the freshness is an important one, because Aidan O'Shea said he's captain this year. That must have missed me. I hadn't seen that until yesterday. We said we really wanted to set a few things straight after a disappointing year last year. We wanted to get back on the right road. So you add that desire to put things right, the rest they would have got from not going straight through into an All-Ireland final, James Horan freshening it up with a new manager. It's almost like the idea that Mayo are a long way on the road. It doesn't feel like this is an old Mayo team. It feels like this is brand new, kind of young, fresh Mayo team.
And you're still going with Dublin and you're a Kimmerer.
Yeah. Well, 13-0. 10 wins and 3 draws.
I hope Jimmy Sloyan doesn't find out that Aidan O'Shea is the captain. Although he's probably been captain the whole time, according to him.
Well, that's the thing. You notice Jimmy Sloyan, that the video is going around on Twitter where he thinks the O'Shea's and all pick the team. There is some debate about Aidan O'Shea, about where he should play for Mayo. What's your thoughts on this, Matty? Like, I actually think centre half forward is his most consistent position for Mayo. Full forward, he's hit and miss. He's not a proper full forward in a scoring manner. He can have good games, same as I used to have good games, but when it came down to it, you weren't accurate enough, you know what I mean, or didn't have that. You were a proper 15 or, you know, 14. Aidan can do a job in there, but he won't have 5 consistent good games in there, you know what I mean? Whereas at 11, he's out in the action and he's kind of, you know, in the mix.
Yeah, I guess through a huge amount of work out there, but he does a lot of work very deep, and I noticed that in the last league game. You know, he spent a lot of time kind of behind midfield.
He's a brilliant tackler.
Very good tackler, and obviously he's a huge man as well. But, you know, is there a bit of potential for him to play full forward now with the offensive mark? During the league, where, you know, he can win high ball, but, you know, a lot of teams, with the exception of the Dublins and the Kerrys, play a kind of packed defence, and it's very easy to snuff that out,
to double up on him, turn around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as you said, look, he's not a prolific scorer, and that's not an insult in any way, but he's not noted for his scoring. I'd like to see him play in midfield for a while. You know, he's going to be on equally as much ball out there, and, you know, somebody like Dermot O'Connor, a centre forward, who's probably a bigger scoring threat. But look, at Mayo haven't found his best position, I don't know, in the last maybe 6-7 years. I'm not sure if we're going to do it in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, but like, he means, suppose he's got 2 all-stars, so, like, I mean, he's definitely been against Tyrone, he alternated between doing a lot of work and being in the full forward line. That's probably the best role. Like, I mean, give him 10 minutes in both halves in full forward just to keep the other team guessing. And, like, if you've got if you know he's coming in centre forward, like Dublin did in 2016 where he destroyed Donegal with that one brilliant goal, Dublin were ready for him. Whereas if he'd gone out centre forward that day as a start, well, Dublin are a little bit rattled. We weren't expecting this. And then stick him in and bring him out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's how James Horan will use him. I don't think he'll use him in midfield, although he could, but I think he's enough options there. I think he'll play him centre forward. He's an option for kickouts on both sides. He gets through a mountain of work and he can go in there if needs be.
Yeah, it's more fluid, so he can play midfield and he can play full forward, and he doesn't need to be told specifically to go into full forward because he's just in that sort of in-between area. I asked him a couple of months ago just which did he prefer, full forward, midfield or centre forward, and he did say centre forward himself as well. And I think it's
Joe Brawley doesn't think he's a centre forward.
Well, Joe Brawley thinks a lot of things, but
Brawley thinks a centre forward has to be the playmaker centre forward. Yeah. Like he has blinkers on as if there's no other type of centre forward you could possibly play, and only a playmaker.
And that's assuming that a playmaker does is pass. Like, Aidan O'Shea makes plays because he charges through three tackles and then he lays it off to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different type of playmaker, but it's probably more effective than a lot of them. Like, you know,
him coming at pace, having three lads around him and throwing it off to Killian O'Connor, who comes around him. Like, I mean,
he draws a lot of frees as well. And you know, there's the penalty in a qualifier game, again, a questionable one, albeit against, was it Fermanagh or Derry a couple of years ago, that got them through. But look, he's such a big man, one on one. He's going to either get away from a guy or he's going to win a free. And, you know, look, it's a good problem for Mayo to have of what position to play him in. But look, I suppose the reality is he can play in probably two or three positions.
That's the thing. The idea that Mayo's forward line is Kevin McLaughlin, Aidan O'Shea, Jason Doherty, Killian O'Connor, Andy Moran, they've all been set in stone pretty much for the last while. So maybe Fionn McDonagh can come in and rattle this, put Jason Doherty into the full forward line. Am I missing anybody here?
Brian Reap just now.
Reap can get in there. But like, I mean, it's not an easy forward line to get on. Now, I've taken Dermot O'Connor out of there and put him, he'd be on the wing and Jason Doherty be in the corner. So like, I mean, now Fionn McDonagh can come in wing forward and Dermot O'Connor goes to midfield. So that's changing it up a little bit. But I can't get away from thinking we're going to be back outside of Fionn McDonagh, who's put his hand up so far, with the same forward line, only Fionn McDonagh comes in, Dermot O'Connor goes to midfield, and that's the change. Is that enough of a change? You know what I mean? Time will tell. It's a bloody brilliant forward line. It has a bit of everything, because Jason Doherty plays a little bit in front of Andy Moran and Killian O'Connor, and it's just a lovely shape. But against Dublin, it has come up short. But if they don't have better players than them, there's not much kind of to do.
Not really. Look, I suppose Saturday night will tell us more. Personally, I'd like to see Dermot O'Connor in the forward line. I think he's one of the best footballers in the country over the last 4 or 5 years. Get through a huge amount of work, and I think he's a real scoring threat as well. He obviously does a huge amount of good work around midfield, and he is a bit of a playmaker, a very good kick passer and things like that. I'd like to see him a bit closer to the goal if and when Seamus O'Shea gets back. And then look at to have a couple of options up there. You know, I think Jason, since he came in, has been very, very good, and he scored consistently in the three games. But he's added that bit of, I suppose, a bit of youth and a bit of legs into that forward line. But we're still going to end up with four or five of the guys we've seen over the last number of years
of the old stuff. And Tom Parsons has to come back into midfield. So
Seamus O'Shea's back now as well, is he?
He's back as well. Yeah.
So all their competition is always around midfield and halfback.
It's not an easy team to get on if you're a young fella. Like, who do you dislodge? Because it's a very set starting 15, and they actually have seven backs into six. There's always, you know, that we've spoken about that. Like, it's between Dirk and Colin Boyle, Lee Keegan, Donny Vaughan is for the halfback line. That's four into three. Then you have the fullback line, which is Harrison,
Cafferkey,
and then Higgins is the other. Then you have Young O'Donoghue, that's not far off that team. Higgins could play fullback, or somebody else could. Harrison can play fullback. That's not an easy team for a young fella to break onto. And Vaughan can play in midfield too. Horan loves Vaughan. Vaughan is a real dynamic runner who only knows one way to go, and that's kind of forward, and he's a big powerful man. And I think James Horan is a huge fan of Vaughan. And I would have a feeling that Colin Boyle might lose out as a wing back ahead of Vaughan.
Ooh. I don't know about that. Well,
he loves Vaughan.
I think I have Colin Boyle playing every day of the week. I think I agree with you. He is a fan of Vaughan, because I think it was a couple of years ago, one of Vaughan's GPS stats, I think, it nearly blew up. He had that many, I think it was 16 kilometres or something ridiculous. Jeez. Like that. And like for in 75 minutes of a Gaelic football match, he just literally must never have stopped. And yeah. No, look at that, that'll bring its own rewards as well.
Yeah, okay, right. So the prediction order, I've got, obviously got Dublin in this accumulator. The other one is Clare to beat Kildare, which is a bit of an outside bet. It is 9-4. Last year, in the 2017, they played Kildare in Newbridge and they only lost by a point. It was 18 points to 114, and Clare beat them that year then a few weeks later in the Division 3 league final in Croke Park. Kildare aren't at full strength. They're nowhere near full strength, actually. They have a whole load of fellas out injury. We know Niall Kelly's gone off the panel. We know Daniel Flynn's gone off the panel. We know Johnny Byrne's gone off the panel. Paul Cribben, Paddy Brophy, Kevin Flynn are all injured. So you're looking at some serious experienced top grade players out. Clare will be pretty much at full strength. Tuberty was on the show last week. He's on absolute fire. He's got over all his injury problems. That's what had been holding him back a little bit, because he hadn't been at full throttle the last couple of years. I haven't found. He's only 31. He's 30, not 32 yet. He's flying it. You know, yeah, like they have a top level first 15 Clare have, and the league is their championship pretty much, because again they have Kerry in a bloody Munster semi-final for the fourth year in a row of memory, or could be fifth. So they're getting completely screwed on it's not even seeded, it's an open draw. They just keep drawing Kerry, like it's terrible bad luck, because they have Cork's measure, like they're beating Cork regularly now and they keep getting Kerry in a semi, so they can't even get the kind of glamour of getting into a Munster final. But anyways, Ronan Sweeney said after the last game in 2017, he said, "They hit harder than any other team we've played so far this season. It's great to be able to take those hits and come out with a win." I just think Clare, Newbridge is a poxy place to play in, but I think it might suit Clare because they're a big, strong, physical team and they like those kind of close exchanges.
Yeah, Clare don't mind getting down and dirty, in fairness. No. We went down to...
they're hardy hooers, aren't they?
Yeah, we went down to Ennis a few times to play and looked scraped over. And this is back in the day in our last visit with the Wexford seniors. We were handed a nice bit of a beating down there 3 years ago. So, you know, they really buy into the qualifiers and have done it the last couple of years and have some really, really good wins in the qualifiers. And you say they're really unlucky just to keep drawing Kerry. I think anybody else in Munster, and they're potentially getting to a Munster final. But, you know, Division 2 is an absolute minefield where, you know, Armagh are second from bottom, haven't won, and yet they're only 2 points off top. Literally any result in Division 2 would not be a surprise. And, you know, Kildare winning in Newbridge certainly wouldn't.
Yeah, so that's it. Anything to say on that, Conan? I don't want to leave you out.
No, no. It was Clare who Paul Galvin, wasn't it, that time a couple of years ago on the show, that said that he always felt like Kerry had to beat them because you were worried about what they could grow into if they got a bit of sort of confidence or got their tails up. And he talked about this arrogance that they had. And every time they went to play Clare, it was this big deal and they had to keep putting them down.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
And I was reading, I think it was a Kieran Shannon piece in The Examiner, where he was talking about Colm Collins has another coach now. So he just said this, but he's concentrating more on their defence because they obviously conceded 32 points to Kerry. And he doesn't like to play a packed defence. So like this fella's coming in trying to improve their defence outside of that. So like that was kind of interesting enough that he goes through a coach a year, Colm Collins. I joke with him on the show here last year. I says, What's your problem? Like, are you an absolute drill sergeant that you won't get? He keeps losing coaches, but maybe it's just for whatever reason. Bowen was there. The wing back from Cork, what's his name? The left half back for Cork when they won the All Ireland. His name is escaping me now. You should know this, Matty.
Effie Fitzgerald was there as well. He's been gone.
Okay, right. So there's plenty of them. So that's it. So Clare 9-4 to beat Kildare. I've Longford at evens to beat Down, and Leitrim at 8-15. The Leitrim Rising to continue against Limerick. So who wants to go next?
I'll go. Yeah. Kerry 8-11 away to Galway.
8-11 away to Galway. See, I don't know if that's. Anyways, look, this is your accumulator. Do you know what the price of this four team accumulator is?
It's 71. I'm going conservative this week. And there's not one draw in it. You were talking about Sean O'Shea not playing. I was like, I hope he does play because he's in my accumulator here. Yeah. Meath 8-11 away to Cork.
Okay.
Talking about Cork, Clare should send some of those coaches down to Cork if they've got so many to spare.
Paddy Cassan.
There you go.
Finally came to me.
This is you, how conservative it is. Derry in Division 4 at home to Wicklow.
Ah, come on.
One to eight, I think that is.
One to eight, just to get it all up. And Longford is my outside one, which isn't really an outside.
Which it's even
like,
right.
At home to Down. I think Pádraig Davies doing a good job there.
Okay, 7-1. Yeah, okay, right. So I was going to put Kerry in, but then I was a little bit concerned away with a defensive system and with a defensive system that just got over Cavan 16-13. You know what I mean? I was thinking that Galway will be that bit better, although obviously Galway are nowhere near full strength, so I'm not too sure.
Still had a very good win away to Monaghan in round three, so
Galway did, yeah, they're coming off a good win. I just wanted to stay away. I wanted to stay away from that. I wasn't sure. A draw actually could be a decent result there.
I can put it. I can make it a draw.
You do love it.
We're getting close to 13.
Don't put your draw into your accumulator.
It's not
right.
23-1.
Maddie, what are you going with?
Mine is. I'm going a little bit more out there than Conan. I have Tyrone 4-5, a home to Monaghan. I'm going with Cork actually, a home to Meath at about 6-4. And then I think the last two are similar to self. I have Longford a home at even money 11-10, and Leitrim at 1-2. And like Division 3 this week is very similar. A lot of really close games, and either result in any of the matches kind of wouldn't really be a surprise. And I think it could be a week where we're going to see, I think, maybe two or three draws across Division 2 and 3.
Well, that's an interesting one now. Well, I think Tyrone are a great price of 4-5 at home against Monaghan, beat them and they have to win.
And I think, look at the couple of weeks break and the good comeback to get the point against Roscommon, will have be a bit of a boost. And they're not going to want to lose. It's a little bit like Dublin, Mayo, or Clare and Kerry. You know, Tyrone won't want to lose a home to Monaghan, and I just think there has to be something to come from Cork at this stage. And maybe the change of scenery might be a help as well. And look, it's just a bit of value, and it's little better than 13-1.
Well, whoever loses between Tyrone and Monaghan are in big trouble, because Roscommon have started the league. So at the start of the league you're thinking Cavan, Roscommon, everyone, we're all safe, you know what I mean, they're going to go back. Roscommon have started really well, and if Tyrone lose, they're on 1 point after four games. Monaghan are on 2 after four games. So they're right down there in trouble. There's a lot of pressure on that game. That's in Omagh, is it?
It is. It's a home game for Tyrone. But look, Cavan kind of looked to be in trouble. If Cavan don't win, if they don't get the 2 points against Roscommon on Sunday, they're probably doomed. And then it's one from three or four. So, whoever wins that Tyrone, you couldn't really rule out a draw, but that the result of that Tyrone Monaghan game is huge for either one of them for the league.
Will we just go a tenner on a draw in every game and do that one? Because there will be draws again this weekend. The first time this has come up is you've gone for Meath and you've gone for Cork. Explain to me.
Do we talking regularly to Meath fellas, and another home game, their first home game again, Tipperary, they were very, very lucky to get over it. The same the last day, Armagh came back very, very strong at them in the end, and they pulled away with a goal. And
Armagh were back with a gale force win to a point down with 10 minutes ago. Yeah. Armagh threw that away.
Yeah, realistically. They've had a couple of good results. They've still only got 2 wins out of 3, but I said they're 4 points, but they're only 2 points off the bottom as well. There has to be something to come from Cork. I said hopefully the change of scenery is going to do the trick for him in Parky Rin.
I'm not sold on Meath either. Meath have let me down in that Division 2 so many times that I don't trust them yet. So I would be wary if I was in your position. Like, even though Cork are just first three games just back against Cork, which we've done, and it's the only one we're consistently getting right.
That's a lot of my thinking, to be honest, because I actually had Meath at the start of the predictions. Now I know it's hard, in the league preview, and I had Meath to go down, I think, along with Cork, but now they're motoring really well. And I look at their team and some of the highlights that we've seen, and Killian O'Sullivan and Dara Campion are scoring from wing forward, and it's here's a team now that have a bit about them, and they're doing, they know what they're at. Brian Menton's still dominating, Mikey Newman's taking over everything from set pieces. So, and then just you put that with the mess of Cork, it's I'm going to put these in for a nice away bet. 8-11, I think, is a good price for it.
It's an interesting one. We've all gone for Longford to beat Down at home, and maybe our thinking is that there's different grounds around the country. There's just terrible places to go, and for some reason that pitch in Longford, it's poxied, and they know it well. There's a bit of a hill on it, and it's just very windy there. One side is open, and Longford are kind of giant killers when it comes to the Ulster teams. They beat Down there 2 years ago in the qualifiers after extra time. They don't seem to worry about playing the Ulster teams. The Mullan and Hockta lads will be back, depending on if they're getting a break or not. Longford might have them on the bench anyways, and it just seems that to all three of us that seems like a very obvious one.
I don't know about very obvious. It's just we were picking one from each division, and if you got through the other games in division
Stay
three,
away.
There's nothing really yeah. jumping out at you. Just said, you know, that's very obvious. Offaly at home to Carlow, you know, is another one that, you know, you'd be trying to avoid.
Draw.
Very, very possible.
Leash Westmead draw.
And you come around.
I think it's Westmead have home advantage in that one. To me, it was a toss up between Westmead and Longford. And without a doubt, Pierce Park is a nightmare of a place to play. It's really tough. It's a real fortress. Once Longford get a bit of wind in their sail there, the crowd really get on the backs of the opposition and really give it for Longford. And, you know, that was my thinking behind the selection of Longford.
Wexford Park isn't a terrible place to go. O'Moore Park isn't a terrible place to go. Celtic Park isn't a terrible place to go, although it used to be. I don't know if it's a reflection on the fact that all three teams have slid down the rankings, or the actual fact that the pitches are lovely and it's actually a nice stadium. Yeah. Are these terrible places to go? Newbridge, Pierce Park, Ockram, you know what I mean? Pretty much shitholes.
I don't know about that. They just have the what do you call it of being, you know, that of being a tough place to go. Like I was kind of thinking about it, you know, about Waterford coming to Wexford Park, and I was saying, you know, you'd wish people were saying, "Geez, I'd hate to go to Wexford Park,"
yeah.
because you know you have a bit of an incentive yeah. straight away. I remember going to Celtic Park years ago, and we knew it was going to be a tough place to go to, and we were flying at the time. We got a nice bit of a trimming up there, but during my own time playing at Wexford, we would have had a really good. Record in Wexford Park, but I don't know if teams were absolutely dreading coming down or anything like that, because said generally even during the league the sun was shining down there most of the time.
The weather will be nice.
Really good surface, and you know we would have been wishing it had been a little bit more hostile down there, but look at us, that's the way it was.
Yeah, okay, right, well listen, that's all we've time for. We might review those accumulators next week.
Oh god, leave that out.
Possibly not. Right, we'll be back on Monday and we'll review the weekend's action as usual. Talk to you then, good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.